So exercise is important because it helps to combat and counteracts many diseases that people encounter on a daily basis. The challenge with physical fitness is, number one, in the summer months, first of all, if you've not been participating in any physical fitness program to begin with, I think it's important to get a physical from your medical doctor to make sure that you're as safe and healthy to start into a physical fitness program. The big problem for me in the summer, obviously, is exercising and training in the heat. Dehydration becomes a problem. As we know, there are a lot of things that can happen when someone becomes dehydrated, including becoming fatigued, cramping, can't think clearly, dizzy, just to name a few. But the big one for me is that when people go on vacation and they are inactive and people return from a wonderful rest, a wonderful time that they had on vacation, and if they were exercising already to begin with, but say they've been gone for 2 or 3 weeks, when they return, as if they return to their exercise program as if they had never missed a day. So what I mean by that, if you were running 5 miles on the day before you left and lifting weights for 2 hours on the day before you left, when you return, you start to do those things right away. The concern here is that there is research evidence that when people take a break or take a rest, quality rest is important, but when the rest goes for a long period, the body can lose 10% strength on a weekly basis. This is happening especially for the folks who are in the hospital. By 3 to 5 weeks, the body can lose 50% of its strength. When people start exercising, there has to be a gradual return. At the most, the return of strength is at a 6% rate per week. Now, the other concern that I have is with tendon. Tendon happens to be a very important topic to me, and it should be an important topic to everyone, because when tendon is injured, it really affects someone's ability to move, ability to function, and it's simply very, very painful. So what I mean by that is when you take a break, tendon strength or its tissue capacity or its ability to withstand stress will decrease at approximately 25% per week, every three weeks. So every 3 weeks, you have a 25% decrease in strength. So say if you were playing on the local softball team and you went on a vacation to somewhere beautiful, but you did not work on playing softball during that vacation and you returned, your tendons are not going to be as strong. So you're going to be, as someone who participates in that sport, susceptible to an injury to the tendon. Worst case scenario, a tendon rupture. An example may be the tendon at the back of the ankle, the Achilles tendon. And this even scarier thing is that with tendon ruptures, 2/3 of them before they're happening, the individual will not have any warning signs. There won't be any immediate soreness. There won't be any immediate pain. 66% of them will just tear and completely snap. That's a devastating injury, requires surgery, and it takes a long time to recover from the Achilles tendon injury that I noted. Some people never recover completely from that one. There are people that take years to get the function of the muscle back in the calf. That is a concern for me is the breaks that people take, the well-deserved quality rest is important, especially after strenuous exercise for short periods of time. But if we return to the volume, the intensity we left at, we are at risk. So the softball player simply could be at risk for straining his hamstring muscles, say for that, or a small tendon in his foot or ankle, or even in a shoulder from throwing a ball from the outfield. One other point I have that is a concern right now in this day and age period, whether it be summer or every time of the year, is that children need to play. And what I mean by that is in reference to tendon, the collagen structure. Collagen is a protein-based substance that the body uses to repair damaged tissue. But collagen structure is set in tendons by the time someone is 17 years old. And the collagen develops in the tendon is an adaptation to the strain and stress that someone plays, that someone uses while these structures are developing. So a lot of people don't know that fact, that our tendons are set by 17 years old. So my big worry is that the next group of physical therapists, orthopedic surgeons, are going to see people as they get to young adulthood who were not active, who all of a sudden decide, you know what, it's time to get active. I'm going to run a marathon, or I'm going to play on the city league softball team. And all of a sudden activity level increases. It would take very little load to injure or rupture a tendon at that point. So those are my hot buttons, in addition to the other things, such as we need to use our common sense. We need to hydrate. We need to avoid really hot days if we can, ozone days, pollution days, etc.
Dr. Graziano, your talk about the tendons is very interesting to me, because I rarely hear in the popular media people talk about not injuring your tendons or about developing your tendons by the time you're 17. This is something that we don't really hear very much about. And so it was a little surprising to me the first time I heard you talk about this. Do you want to comment just a little bit more about the role of exercise for young people and how critical it is? And can you, if you haven't exercised a lot, or if you haven't developed that your tendons by the time you're 17 or 18, can you regain that later to increase your capacity, or is that pretty well set?
It's pretty well set by the time you're 17 years old, but you can still train a little bit. The inside of tissues, the tendon matrix, can be strengthened. I reference one of my therapists who I've studied with. Her name is Jill Cook from Australia. She has a four-phase isometric loading program that is valid and is effective. And I think the detail she has presented with her research, she is the foremost expert in the world on lower extremity tendon injuries. But exercise is very, very important for children, because the tendons, the musculoskeletal system is developing. And Wolf's Law states that basically, Wolf's Law pertains to bone, but our body is going to adapt to the stresses that are placed upon it. So children who play will have an advantage for developing these structures. They're going to be strong later as they become adults. So, you know, the American Physical Therapy Association guidelines, children should be out there playing regularly during a daily routine basis. Young adults, it's recommended an hour a day. For adults like you and I, Leonard, 150 minutes a week. Movement, as I said, Hippocrates said it, is man's best medicine. If we move, it can counteract things like high blood pressure, heart disease, anxiety and depression, arthritis. We're simply going to feel better. We're going to function better. We're going to be stronger. We're going to be more energetic. And you put those together with principles of good nutrition, getting plenty of sleep, all those other factors, I think movement is one of the best things we can do from a medical standpoint.
Dr. Graziano, I want to back up a bit and for our listeners, review your credentials a little bit. I want people to know why we're talking to you this morning and not somebody else. I want them to understand that what you can tell us and contribute is far beyond what we're likely to hear from our gym buddy, or maybe even a trainer. There's a big string of letters after your name, Dr. Graziano, and they recognize your professional studies and your many practice accomplishments. I wonder if you would just share with us some insight into your background, and maybe start with the fact that you're a local guy. You started your post a secondary education right here in Kenosha, didn't you?
I did. Actually, I was born in Racine and moved to Kenosha before I was 1 year old. And I was a student within the Kenosha Unified School District. I was injured many times. I desperately wanted to play football as long as I could. I loved the game of football. I injured my shoulders, had to go through four shoulder operations. I injured my left knee. I had an ACL tear when they were just barely being able to start to fix those surgically. Through my injuries and through my sport, that's when I realized, because I had an excellent physical therapist that I worked with. His name was Steve Jensen. I'm sure he won't mind. But through my sport, I came in contact with him as he helped me to return to function. As it turned out, I never obviously was able to play football any further than through my sophomore year when I attended Carthage College for my entry level degree in physical education and health and my pre-physical therapy degree. I never got beyond my sophomore year, but during those injuries, I knew that I wanted to be doing something in medicine. And I knew eventually it came to me that it was my calling to become a physical therapist. So I did my undergraduate work at Carthage College, my pre-physical therapy work at Carthage College. Then I went and did my entry-level training at Northwestern University downtown in Chicago. The PT school campus is in downtown Chicago. And I graduated from Northwestern University on October 4th, 1987 with a bachelor's degree in physical therapy. And that's the first initials, PT. That's for my bachelor's degree and my initial completing my licensure through a process through the state of Wisconsin. But I knew it wasn't enough. During my physical therapy training, I was introduced to orthopedic manual physical therapy. I was introduced to a man by the name of Stanley Paris from the University of St. Augustine Health Sciences in Florida, and the history behind what he's done in physical therapy, especially in the United States. And because of my studies and trying to learn what he did initially in my undergraduate, in my entry-level work, I decided that that was the way I wanted to go. That was where I wanted to study, and that was what I wanted to dedicate my career to. So after graduation from Northwestern, I've started studying at St. Augustine. I completed my first manual therapy certification from the University of St. Augustine, and these dates are very important to me. I passed the written, practical, and oral exams on October 4th, 1994. But I still knew it wasn't enough, because I was getting some decent outcomes with patients, but patients were leaving my tables, leaving my clinics, and I would scratch my head. I would get upset with myself. Why is that person not better? What am I missing? What am I not doing to make their life better? So I continued to earn my transitional doctorate of physical therapy to study more manual therapy through the University of St. Augustine, where I completed my transitional doctorate of physical therapy in 2005. I graduated in December of that year. But I still wasn't satisfied. Outcomes were getting a little bit better, but it still wasn't enough. I had gone to my first conference shortly after getting my transitional doctorate of physical therapy. It was with the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapists. It was in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I was able to listen to some wonderful speakers, keynote speakers on that day. And I got to talk to many physical therapists who were, first time I had ever heard of this term, they were fellowship trained in manual therapy. And their ability and as the way they talked with me about how they treated and handled patients, I knew I needed to know more. I wanted to have the highest possible skill level that I could have for the patients who come through the doors to see me. So at that point, I thought it was a requirement to enter fellowship training to become a board certified orthopedic clinical specialist. So I studied on my own for about 2.5 years to take the specialty exam as provided by the board. And I probably overstudied, but it was worth every minute of it because that study was something that I applied and apply still on a daily basis to the patients that I see.
Wow.
So
let me interrupt here for a minute, Dr. Graziano, so that those who have just tuned in on the half hour know that here on Community Matters this morning, we're talking about summer physical fitness. And my guest this morning is Dr. David Graziano, a graduate of Carthage College, cum laude, and he's telling us how we can keep safe and exercise well and keep our bodies in good shape during the summer and the whole year, actually. And we're just talking about Dr. Graziano's credentials. And Dr. Graziano, please continue about your training. Go on and tell us what the next step was.
After I completed the orthopedic clinical specialty, after I went to that conference in Charlotte, I wanted to become a fellowship trained physical therapy. So I started looking at fellowship programs throughout the country. I almost enrolled in one in Denver at Regis University. Then I picked up a newsletter one day from the American Academy of Orthopedic and Manual Physical Therapists. I just flipped it open and there was a page with an ad from the Manual Therapy Institute. And I read the ad from the Manual Therapy Institute there, a fellowship program in manual therapy, and their home base is in Austin, Texas. And as I read, they were having a class, the instructors were coming up to Rosalind Franklin University in North Chicago, and they would be up here for every 6 to 8 weeks. So at random, I couldn't believe it. This just appeared before my eyes. It was like God intervening. And at random, I knew that was the program for me. It was going to be better financially. I would not have to fly out every 6 to 8 weeks. I would not have to book a hotel and a rental car every 6 to 8 weeks. I would just have to drive down the road for 45 minutes to get to my program.
And that's a sweet deal.
It was clinically based. Yeah. It was clinically based, and their emphasis was on teaching us how to use our hands. The manipulation is defined by Dr. Paris as a skilled movement is a skilled movement performed by the hands. And their emphasis was teaching us how to use our hands to move joints, to do grade 5 technique where joints sometimes pop. There are very few physical therapists who do that, and I am very proud to say that I am one of them. And they emphasize something called movement pattern retraining. I'm going to quote another one of the therapists in the world who I greatly admire. Her name is Shirley Sauerman from Washington University in St. Louis. And her quote is, "If it moves funny, you're going to hurt. And if you hurt, you're going to move funny." So I graduated fellowship training. I'll never forget the day, March 23rd, 2012. And to me, that was just another starting point because at that point in my career, outcomes were getting better. It was becoming more fun to treat because I was able to identify problems I couldn't come close to identifying and treating before. Then I knew I still needed more. And I began to study with the continuing education program with the Manual Therapy Institute. I was able to study the tendon work of Jill Cook from Australia and go down to Texas and hear her speak and teach. I was able to go listen to Jeremy Lewis, who is one of the greatest shoulder physical therapists in the world from London, England. I was able to go down and study manual therapy with who I think has the greatest hands in the world, Dr. Lori Hartman from London, England, and I was able to study with his protege, and I'm going to be studying with his protege this coming month, Dr. Daryl Herbert from London, the British School of Osteopathic Medicine, and of course his private practices. So I have not stopped studying my entire career. I feel like that I owe that to the patients who ask me for help. I don't ever want to go home and feel like I didn't do all that I could. Lives are being devastated by injury, disease processes, and I have to do that.
Dr. Graziano, so to become a fellow requires, as I gather, this is a term we see a lot, but none of us really know what it takes. It sounds like you have to go through an examination after quite a long course of study to become a fellow. This isn't just a bunch of fellows who all go out drinking together. This is something very serious and academically challenging. Have I got the picture?
Yes. It's, every class period there is a short quiz or exam, and there's a full-on midterm written exam, final written exam, practical, and oral examinations that have to occur in front of the founders of the program. And I'm going to mention their names, Peter Kroon, K-R-O-O-N, and Tim Kruchowski, K-R-U-C-H-O-W-S-K-Y. They're both living in Austin. We're two of the best physical therapists. You have to take exams in front of those gentlemen. Very intimidating when you have to go give an oral exam and a practical exam when you're standing in front of two of the best physical therapists in the world. And in my opinion, they are. Once you complete your classroom work, you have to do hours in the clinic, mentorship hours, kind of like you would see on a medical doctor television show where the students, like Grey's Anatomy, I did see a little bit of that, where the students walk around with their training doctor, and you have to go through hours and work on patients together and get drilled and work on techniques and get quizzed until you feel like you can't be quizzed or questioned anymore, and you have to keep going through it again and again and again and again. So becoming a fellowship training, a trained physical therapist for me and what in my field means that you've reached the highest level of practice that you can achieve in the clinic. And still, it's never enough.
Well, it certainly will make a difference, I'm sure, to what your clients. And full disclosure, I've benefited from Dr. Graziano's ministrations in the past upon the recommendation of my physician because of hospitalizations that required me to have some help to get back in working shape. Now, Dr. Graziano, now that we know that you know what you're talking about, in a greater detail than you could possibly imagine, and have a feel for what manual physical therapy includes, I want to dig a little bit deeper into some of the topics we talked about a little bit earlier. Let's dig deeper now into what the average person needs to know about exercise and personal training and just keeping fit generally, particularly. We have a lot of baby boomers here now who are coming of age. I'm technically a war baby, but there's a lot of baby boomers behind me. My suspicion is that this is going to be a field day for physical therapists as my friends, the boomers, come up and try to maintain their level of activity in recreational activities and maintaining their daily activities as well. I wonder if you would talk a little bit about that in greater detail. I'm particularly interested in what you've said about the length of how quickly one loses muscle tone, how quickly one loses the capacity of your tendons to support your activities. And I gather from what you've said, it takes quite a bit more time to regain it than it does to lose it. Is that right?
It does. It takes, well, let's use the statistic that I gave before. When you are down, the folks who are suffering and who are hospitalized right now, they're going to lose up to 10% of total body strength per week. By 3 to 5 weeks, they will have lost 50% of their strength. And when all conditions are the best possible on their recovery, the fastest you can regain it is about 6% per week. So it takes, it's twice as fast to lose it than it is to regain it.
Well, that's depressing.
I can't emphasize enough. It is. So when you look at that 6 and 10, that's almost twice as fast to regain it. And the conditions have to be absolutely optimal for that to happen. But I can't emphasize enough. If you are not involved in regular exercise at this point, the first step is to go get a physical from your physician to make sure that it is safe for you. Once you are cleared and it is safe for you, I would recommend possibly consulting with your physical therapist, talking about what type of exercises are good for you, examining what joint limitations or problems may be affected for you individually, and getting a good prescription with exercise. I see a lot of people when I go to various gyms, health clubs, that I've been to in the area and throughout the country that don't have good technique, regardless of what time of year. Good technique is very, very important when performing the exercise program of what you decide to do, whatever you choose to do. If you don't have good technique, the obvious factor is that you are at risk of injury. The other thing that I have noticed is that people do not warm up well when they exercise. And I emphasize this with everybody. Your core temperature needs to be increasing a little bit. I recommend to people, before you get into the heart of your hard exercise program, be breaking a light sweat. So if you're a weightlifter and you go to the gym, a good warm-up might be get on the exercise bike slowly, gradually. Get the joints and the muscles to start warming and loosen up. Or walk around the gym for a few minutes. If you're a golfer, before you get on the first tee, take a walk around the clubhouse or the area outside in front of the tee. Start moving. Break that light sweat. Get your body warm. I think you'll find that you will function better in your exercise, and you'll play better in whatever sport that you choose. And I can't emphasize enough. I think that we as individuals should be seeing a physical therapist occasionally, just to examine joints and being proactive versus reactive. Because the way our healthcare model is now is that in physical therapy, we react when an injury occurs. I would love to be able to see patients just to look at them before they embarked on an exercise program, give a top to bottom examination so that we can identify possible areas that could be a problem, maybe address those with some specific exercises and ensure that the person is safer with what they're going to do and participate in. And again, you need to watch the basics in the summer. Is important. Heat related illness is important. Maybe avoid exercising in the sun and the hottest times during the day. Watch out for ozone and pollutants, because that could create problems where you're not going to feel well, and it can physically cause damage.
I wonder if we could spend a minute talking about the hydration thing just a little bit more. I actually ended up in the hospital because of dehydration by accident a year or two ago. And I thought I was doing a pretty good job of hydrating myself. So I learned the hard way how easy it is to slip into a dehydrated state. Maybe it's easier when you're older. I don't know. You want to talk about that just a little bit more, Dr. Graziano?
I think in the United States, and I am guilty of this, we don't drink enough. I know that I don't drink enough during the day. And when you're dehydrated, you simply don't feel well. Your body begins to tire. You don't think clearly. Your muscles will start to cramp. You will weaken. You will fatigue. Your breathing may increase. your heart rate may increase. You may get headaches. People who go to the extreme may even faint. If body temperature is raised, I'm talking about heat related illness too, in reference to dehydration. You know, the water or the fluids will help cool you down. If the body temperature is raised to over 104 degrees, that is life threatening.
Do you find that there is
a benefit? I think it's important in the United States.
Do you find that there's a benefit in terms of what you drink? What is your personal recommendation for, should I be drinking just tap water? Should I be drinking one of the many? There's so many different sports drinks now on with electrolytes and this-a-lite and that-a-lite that I think it's very confusing to people as to what's necessary for them. Is there any rule of thumb that could be useful for us?
I personally am not a nutritionist, but I think obviously that water is the best thing to be drinking. And I know people that I encounter during the day that, and myself included, and I'm going to talk about myself, I don't drink enough water during the day. When I'm seeing patients and I have the mask on, or I'm going between table to table or exercise area to exercise area, I forget I'm not thirsty. So I forget to take the time and drink. So I like water. Now, after I have a heavy workout where I have perspired a ton, and I usually do get very sweaty when I work out hard, I like to drink some type of electrolyte solution. So I'm a big fan of Pedialyte. By drinking the electrolytes, it keeps me from cramping. I also like Gatorade. So whatever I can get my hands on quickly after a heavy workout. But for the most part, for me, I think water is the best fluid to have on a daily basis. Our bodies are made mostly with water, so it would make sense to replace water with more water.
We've heard a lot from you about your training and the great satisfaction you obviously get from helping people recover from whatever injury that they may have or prepare for an active exercise program and an active recreational life. Perhaps we have listeners who have friends and relatives and children and grandchildren who share an interest in what could become a career in physical therapy. Dr. Graziano, Dave, could you just give us an idea of how one could pursue that kind of a career? You did it. You did it right here. You're a Kenosha Racine guy. You did it. And now today, I think in our listening area of Racine, Kenosha and Walworth counties and spilling over into Illinois, into northeastern Lake County, there are some entry level opportunities for education and employment as well. I wonder if you would just talk a little bit about that and whether people can get internship opportunities. And what if a kid's in high school and they want to explore this? Tell us a little bit about that, because we know the demand for physical therapists is going to increase. Am I right? Because of the baby boomers?
Absolutely. It's going to increase. Yeah. And that demand is going to increase because we are in our relatively infancy as a profession. We've been a formal profession in the United States only since 1921 and in Europe since 1895. But that's another topic. I love the history of the profession. But if anyone wants to become a physical therapist, who's in the local area, number one, you are more than welcome to contact me and discuss it personally. You are more than welcome, if you are serious about becoming a physical therapist, shadowing me to see what I do. Because one of the things on an application is you need to have hours in the clinic observing not only myself, but different kinds of physical therapists and different kinds of specialties. You can do your pre-physical therapy training. They have excellent programs at Carthage College and the University of Wisconsin Parkside. Your pre-physical therapy training will have to include at least a year and a half in the biological sciences, probably including one course in anatomy and physiology. You'll need a full year of chemistry. I mean, when the body moves, when a nerve fires, there's a whole slew of chemical reactions that have to occur for a person to do those activities, and chemistry is important towards that. You'll need a year of physics, you know, the study of how objects move. I need to know when I'm loading an inch of tissue, combining it with the biological sciences, what the healing rates are of that tissue, how much I can load it from a physics standpoint, what type of lever is that joint or muscle working on, so that I don't injure it, but I don't do too little so that we slow down their progress. I think it's important that students learn how to write well. So you're going to need to take your standard requirements, such as your English. I write every day. I write everyday progress reports. I have to write notes on patients every day, and writing never stops. And the importance of writing well, I can't emphasize enough. When I work with my fellowship students, they have to write papers for me, and I expect them to be well written so that I can understand them. I also think it's important to be able to learn how to speak orally. You never know when you become a physical therapist. So some schools do require that, that when you have to speak to a parents group for an athletic program, or you need to speak to a community service group, such as the Rotary, or you just need to, in general, go to the, like I had to do the violin school to talk about posture when children play their instruments. When you apply to physical therapy school, you'll need to have written recommendations. And that's, again, where the shadow hours or the observation hours will come in. You'll need a physical therapist to write one of those recommendations. And I am happy to serve in that capacity for many people who go into physical therapy. And the other thing is that we need to, for entry into physical therapy school now, people will need to take the graduate record examination. So at some point during your college career, you will sit down for the GRE, and I can even talk to you a little bit about that if you come and visit me.
You're bringing back horrible memories of taking the GRE graduate record exam. You're bringing back just horrible memories that I still have all these decades later. Now, you actually are a participant in the training programs of some local educational institutions or regional educational institutions. So, you want to give us just a couple of seconds about what role you play? Because I found that very interesting and fascinating. I'm used to seeing being in the hospital and seeing in a teaching hospital and seeing a bunch of doctors in training following along the person who's the attending physician or the specialist. But when I come to your office, I often see you with people that are in training, and not just in a very junior way. Could you talk a little bit about that and how that works in terms of what happens as people get closer to their graduation and their credentials? How does that happen?
I am a clinical faculty member at the Manual Therapy Institute, the fellowship program where I graduated. So as part of fellowship, you have to come and serve 440 hours in the clinic under a qualified faculty member or mentor. So my job is to actually take the classroom work that the candidate has learned and to begin putting it together in an efficient and effective manner so that the candidate is able to learn how to treat patients. Yeah,
that's great. That's great. Now, as we begin to wind up here, I want to leave our listeners with a reference maybe or two that they could find more information on these topics on the great World Wide Web. Dave, Dr. Graziano, do you have a couple of references for people to take a look at?
Yep. I got two of them that I think are particularly good. The first one is the American Physical Therapy Association Physical Activities Guideline, and you can find that on the internet. And one of my personal favorites is a 9.5-minute video by a physician, and his name is Dr. Mike Evans, and the video is titled 23 and a Half Hours, and it talks about, in layman's terms, and even great cartoon pictures, the benefits of physical fitness and exercise. That's one of my favorites, and I recommend that to everyone. Dr. Mike Evans, 23 and a half hours, put that in and it'll show up on YouTube.
Are there any other references that you would like to recommend or sources of information for students who might want to learn more about a career in physical therapy, Dr. Graziano?
Oh, I instruct them to investigate the American Physical Therapy Association website. On that website, it'll talk about the basic requirements of physical therapy, and it'll talk about there's information about every accredited physical therapy school in the country. So I recommend looking at the requirements for each school, possible schools that you might be interested in investigating, and you can gear your pre-physical therapy work towards those schools because they may have slight differences between school to school. The other one I would recommend is the AAOMPT website. AAOMPT stands for the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapists. There it talks about fellowship training and what it means and the various programs that are being offered, things that are happening politically with our profession, and of course, upcoming conferences and continuing education programs. So those are the two. If you're interested in a career, check those out regularly. And again, I can't emphasize enough, go visit your favorite physical therapist and talk to them about this profession that you want to enter it at some point. And I'm sure, I know I will, if you're serious about this or serious about investigating it, I'll do whatever I can to help you.
How many years of training does it take before you can get your first job as a PT?
Most programs require 3 years. It takes about 3 years, 3.5 years to fulfill your entry level requirements. And then most professional training programs, which are at a doctor of physical therapy level now, require another 3 years of professional training before you can enter your first job as a physical therapist.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. This has been very informative and we've learned a lot. Now, I'd like to hear you that reference to that video again, because that video sounds really important. How do I Google or you search YouTube to find that nearly 10-minute video then, Doctor?
All you need to do is put in Dr. Mike Evans, 23 and a half hours. That's the title of the video. And I think it's awesome. I think it's powerful, and it only takes 9.5 minutes to watch.
Thank you. Thank you very much to my guest today, Doctor of Physical Therapy, David Graziano, a local fellow who has made good in the profession of physical therapy. May you help many, many hundreds of people in the balance of your career. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta urging you to get informed, get involved, and stay fit. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Support comes from the Kenosha County Aging and Disability Resource Center. Dementia care specialists provide free support and education for people with dementia and their caregivers to ensure quality of life while living at home. Call 262-605-6646.
Support for classical music on WGTD comes from Piasecki Funeral Home. Honor a life well lived with a gift of a service for burial or cremation with a professional, friendly, and compassionate staff. Serving the community for 90 years, Piasecki Funeral Home.